This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to the summer edition of the ILTA podcast, What Went Wrong? Often we hear that mistakes are what make us learn the most, and during this podcast series, we find out what should have happened, what actually happened, and then dive into lessons learned. Knowing that hard work often breeds success, we want to know what went wrong moment change the course of an idea, a life, or a career. My name is Beth Ann Stubbe, and on behalf of ILTA, I would like to welcome Ben Wynn Simmons. Ben is the head of growth at Flipit and has previously held positions as the head of investments at Coral Reef and investment director at 3i and Barclays Private Equity. Ben is an ILTACon attendee and innovator and is here today to talk about changing technology, innovation, and his summer peer-to-peer article, Lessons from Failed Innovation Projects. Thank you for joining us today, and welcome, Ben.
Thanks for having me, Beth.
It's always interesting when someone says they have a superpower. You said in your article that you are bringing market strategy, product development, and design together. So let's start there. Tell me about your superpower and why it's definitely not a phrase I've ever gotten to say aloud before.
Mine is actually kind of a bit of a Venn diagram of three things. And for the longest time, it's actually a bit of a kind of superpower detractor, career detractor. People would say, well, we'll try and put you into one box. Are you kind of a creativity type, or you're a techie type, or you're kind of businessy type? And actually, you know, luckily, I've kind of learned to view it as a positive. And it's where all three meet. And actually, if you're kind of doing anything novel or innovative in business, you need to have creativity. You need to have kind of work out how that innovation is going to make a business impact, and then how to implement it in a kind of technological way, typically in my space anyway. So those three things are kind of, that's where I sit in the middle of all three. And actually bringing all those three together, is very powerful.
How does the topic of what went wrong resonate with you?
Yes, hopefully it doesn't resonate with me too much, and it's not associated with me. But no, I think, you know, in relation to the article I wrote, and actually to a large degree, you know, dealing with new projects, not necessarily dealing with startups, yes, but also kind of new projects within large businesses, anything that's innovative or novel, there is a high chance, if not kind of the majority chance, of failure. And so things going wrong. And, you know, failure, lots of people say that it's only really a kind of a failure if you fail to learn. So kind of identifying what went wrong and kind of digging into it and understanding that actually, I think, makes you much better at future projects, and also kind of able to adjust faster to kind of changing circumstances, etc. So I think it's a kind of almost a debrief, a reflection on a project, and not necessarily a negative at all.
Talking very openly about failure helps us certainly learn, as you say, from it, you know, conducting either post-mortem or just trying to figure out, you know, lessons learned. Do you believe that a career, a project, or a life can be markedly changed for the better because something went wrong?
Yeah, this is a tricky question, because the actual thing going wrong is never good. You don't want the thing to go wrong. You never set out for it to go wrong. But nearly always, you know, you learn something from it, and that can be applied in the future. There's another piece to it. It's, you know, if you're not at risk of something going wrong, then are you trying something really, really novel? Probably not. And actually, quite often, the you don't start out with a brilliant idea. You start off in the general direction with an initial idea. That thing doesn't work, and you have to adjust it along the way. And actually, it's the third or fourth iteration of that. So you kind of lots of mini failures along the way, and suddenly you get something that actually is extremely valuable and just explodes, or transforms the business, or, you know, transforms the way people interact and communicate. So you it's a kind of, I suppose, I see the creative process as a series of failures until it doesn't fail anymore. And that is just part of the process. So yes, it substantially changes projects, careers. It is a very different mindset, as you point out. I think you've kind of got to, if you are kind of creating anything new, you've got to anticipate failure, or at least setbacks. So just being kind of open about it actually is very, very healthy, and a good way to deal with it and deal with the stress.
Which I imagine, you know, is part of that due diligence you talk about in your article. You align it to being really key. If you don't do the due diligence, you're going to fail, and vice versa. And sometimes it continues to happen. Why don't you think most people see the writing on the wall during a project or their life, or, you know, some sort of big step before it's too late?
I think this is a kind of a quite subtle but really important learning for me in a lot of the projects that I do. It's not to say you don't do due diligence at all. You do due diligence. It's just that the results of due diligence are always uncertain. You can kind of take a guess at things. You never know for certain whether things. You can do a survey, which implies certain things, but it's never a given. So you've always kind of actually, you know, on the important decisions at least, you're kind of arbitrating between a kind of gut feeling one way and a gut feeling another way, and some anecdotal evidence to back something up and some anecdotal evidence to back up the other way. And I think the crux of the article, the key learning for me, was really actually the importance of a few things. And whenever you have a business kind of decision to make, you generally understand both sides of the argument, but you will prioritize one based on your kind of awareness of its significance, and the other one you think, oh, that's less significant, therefore I'll ignore it. It's not that, no, so much that you didn't know about it. The risk of failure, you could always know that a cost will overrun, or somebody may not use something as much as you want. You know about that failure, but it's understanding the quantum, or appreciating, or having a feeling for, of the likely impact or significance of that thing. That's what I really learned from kind of my multiple trials, errors, and a few I'm glad to say wins in kind of innovative projects.
Do you think there's business value in failure?
Not in failure per se, not in that very item. Sure. But I think you know if your business is not failing, then almost by definition you're not innovating. You're not trying things that are new. And so you might be actually kind of in a process of kind of a slow death. I think that quite a lot of businesses actually are in that. You see, a few of the larger businesses I've worked for, there becomes an established process which makes that business very successful. And then, when the kind of the founders or the innovators initially then move on, kind of more of classic managers step in, and they kind of lock down the processes and make it repeatable and scalable. And that works, and it's brilliant, and the business grows. But if the market shifts underneath it, then, doing the same thing you've done before actually becomes the wrong thing. And unless you're trialing out new stuff constantly and accepting failure. And so therefore, I think you will have some part of your business doing an innovative project that will be failing. And just knowing that and just unfortunately writing off, you don't want to fail, but there is a consequence of doing anything that's not certain. So that from that point of view, it's the third thing that you do that is not a failure, but you require the two previous failures to do it. And it's the actual, so that's the value you get.
As an international member of ILTA, do you see any intrinsic differences between the way American companies and international ones view failure and innovation?
Yeah, it's very interesting, this. I've been told constantly there's a stereotype that kind of Americans embrace startup culture and therefore more accepting of failure. It's certainly not been my experience, actually. I think they do, but I don't think there's any huge difference between I work in the UK and the US from what I've seen, but I may be in a small bubble because of what I do. So I work with lots of kind of creative and innovative teams, and so therefore I suppose there's a bit of a skew. The one thing I do think is quite interesting is I am aware if you're approached by a small business, right, so if you're a large business, say a law firm, typically relatively large in the world of scale ups and startups, there used to be kind of lots of procurement practices that says unless you have a balance sheet of X, or unless you've got clients of all the top name brands, then you cannot work with us. And it seems very sensible because it's saying, well, have you got the experience to work with someone like us? Have you got X, Y, and Z? But that kind of procurement practice excludes small startups by its very nature. So it's kind of chicken and egg. How do they get the big clients if they've never had a big client before? But actually, I think in the US, I think it's large businesses are generally a bit more open to just trialing things with startups. And I think there's more of a culture of doing pilots. So rather than saying this won't work, it's, well, let's put a small amount of money aside and see if it does work. And then if it does, building on that. So I think that part I have seen as a different, and I think it's very positive for the US actually.
Do you think that has anything to do with the way technology has changed innovation and sort of IT practices in general?
Absolutely. I mean, 5 years ago, startups was a thing, but it's now mainstream. I think nearly every large business has some kind of innovation function. Basically to interact and make sure that they don't miss out. The thinking is very much turned on its head. it's you know, it used to be rather kind of snooty towards the smaller businesses. Now it's like, oh, actually, maybe they could disrupt me. Maybe they're a threat. And you know, I think that people are, you know, have been CEOs in general, and they're kind of all the way down the business being quite scared in many ways of being disrupted. So I want to make sure that they have a foot in the game, as it were, of anything new and novel, and therefore they're much more open to it, which is brilliant.
I think innovation and kind of those buzzwords are taking on a new meaning, especially in ILSA's constituency. If ILSAization is one of our next events and innovation is a buzzword, what do you think is the next phase in all of this? Innovation has to come around somehow.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it has to mature. And then as soon as it does, it ceases to be innovation. It becomes kind of business as usual. So innovation will always be ongoing, I think, Beth. But you, what it will be is the things that were innovative will no longer seem innovative. So the other kind of classic buzzwords at the moment are maybe mobile, cloud, AI, big data or blockchain or something. You know, if they are successful, they will no longer be going to innovation conferences. You know, they almost shouldn't be there. Those things will be, you know, just not business as usual conferences. Just that's how things are done these days. So they will grow out of that. But I suspect new ideas will come along and they'll start going to the innovation conferences. So there'll be a churn of ideas, but the notion of innovation will always be there, hopefully.
I think that you've had a really innovative career. And looking back over career, can you tell me, you know, as this podcast is called, What Went Wrong? What's your what went wrong moment?
Yeah, innovative / meandering / lots of things, you know, in lots of different directions. Disparate is another word. But I find it hugely fascinating to learn about lots of different disciplines and kind of trialing lots of different things. What went wrong moment is, you know, kind of, I didn't send an email to the wrong person by accident. That it's more of a kind of what went wrong initiative or project, which is actually spread over a longer period of time. And I talk a bit about this in the article, but I launched a business, and actually it wasn't necessarily, you know, an obvious, I was aware of this issue, but the emphasis of when you launch a product or service, the client or end consumer has to kind of really, really, really love it. I had heard of people saying, you kind of think, oh yeah, they like it. And I asked my friends and they like it, but actually liking isn't enough, because you've got to overcome a huge amount of inertia, friction, marketing, other things, incumbents, and noise, just to kind of get to your end user. So it's actually, you know, now I focus, having experienced that a couple of times, I focus almost entirely on is this something that people absolutely love? Otherwise, it's almost, you know, if you're going to make life very hard for yourself. So it was, I mean, if anything, my kind of what went wrong was I was for too long kind of pushing a product that people found that they liked, but they didn't love. And actually kind of getting it to that point, they really love it. Even if it's a small number of people, is actually far more important than kind of trying to scale or push out or roll out, spending a lot of money and time on marketing and pushing out something that people get a bit, you know, indifferent to at the end of the day.
That's an incredibly hard lesson to learn. And then trying to motivate yourself after that, I imagine is difficult. So what do you do? How do you motivate yourself to move on to the next thing?
It's tough. I mean, I think, you know, I'm personally quite a competitive person. So I think the desire to prove myself kind of wins out for me personally. I think there's a huge pride fall. You know, I was an investment director at Barclays Private Equity. I was first class master's in engineering from Oxford University. I've got kind of quite a good CV in that capacity. So therefore, kind of trying a business, you have to go and tell your friends and family, everyone, I'm doing this business, you announce it to the world, and then that business doesn't take off. It's a bit like, oh, Ben tried this thing and it failed. it's that stigma, and being able to kind of move on from that. I think, you know, it's a bit of the world just moves on anyway. So you'll end up getting a job and doing other things otherwise. But actually being aware that of actually almost what we started off talking about, Beth, was, you know, actually failure is not, unfortunately, it's not something you aim for, but it is actually just part of the process. And if you think of it in that capacity, then failure really isn't failure. And you can just you can pick it up, learn from it, and actually reapply it.
There's an old adage that says you've made it 100% through all of your bad days.
Yes, exactly. That. Yeah, hopefully, you know, there'll be some sweeter ones on the horizon shortly. And I fully believe that, actually. I think I'm always quite keen to maybe hire people from businesses that they've gone and done something themselves that hasn't worked out, because they've shown a lot of initiative. They'll understand much better than a lot of people that are kind of, if you're in a successful business, you may not actually understand why it's successful. There's a certain momentum that will just carry you along, and a certain brand name attached to it, etc. Was actually, if you know, really experienced it firsthand, you've got the pain of kind of getting it right and really understanding what really drives people. I think that's hugely valuable.
You're doing some really cool stuff now at Flipit. What's next for you and for Flipit?
Flipit allows businesses to build apps. And actually what's brilliant about this is because technology shouldn't be a blocker. Technology is, if you've got a use case where I want to make sure that I can connect better with my clients or provide better services to my clients, I can dream up these ideas. If technology is a blocker and someone basically says, oh, to do that, it's going to take 12 months, it's going to cost you, you know, $500,000, and we don't even know it's going to work, that project dies then. No one's going to try it. No one's going to risk it. And it especially never happens, which is a huge shame, because it might have actually been hugely valuable. So Flipit allows businesses to build apps in a kind of drag and drop system to a high quality, so that technology is not a blocker. The cost plummets as a result. You don't need to hire an entire development team to do it. You can do multiple apps. That really is a huge enabler for businesses, and the ability to try things, iterate, improve on it, change it, without the cost and the kind of resource requirements drowning it, because that's quite often what happens otherwise, is a huge game changer for some businesses. And so once people kind of get into this, we're a really interesting tipping point where there was people used to do kind of new development with a kind of huge tech team, and now actually they are able to do it themselves, even if they're not a coder. Opens the world up to lots of interesting projects. And I think we're only at the beginning of that process. So for me and Flipit, that's going to be the next phase, really, kind of bit, you know, letting people know this is possible, and that's what we hope to do with Ilsta.
Thank you so much for joining us and being so candid about failure and next projects. I think our Ilsta list. Yep. Do you have any last words?
I think we covered a lot, actually, Beth. Thank you very much for having me. And yes, and hopefully I'll see some of the Ilsta members. Well, I will definitely see some of the Ilsta members shortly at your upcoming conference. And happy to talk to anyone about apps and innovation in future.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us, Ben.
Pleasure. Thanks.
You've been listening to Ilsta Radio. Subscribe to Ilsta's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. Ilsta Radio. Get tuned in.